welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. We come your way every Saturday, normally at 3 p.m. Pacific time, but today 7 p.m. Pacific time on Saturday. And we stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We are also rebroadcast on Sundays at 3 p.m. Pacific time on A2Zen.fm. And we archive these programs. It's funny, I was having a conversation with my wife this morning about that. And I said, you know, it's funny how everybody says, you know, that I ought to have podcasts and, you know, and this and all these different terms. And I'm saying, but I do. And they're called archives. That's what they are. You can an MP3 file by any other name is still an MP3 file, but they're available at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. And next month, February, we're going to be coming your way on Sundays at 3 p.m. here on this station. We're also going to be broadcasting as well on A2Zen.fm at 3 p.m. Pacific time. So we certainly hope that you will make time in your day. Tune in on the radio, tune in on the internet at either place. We'd love to have you listen to our various guests. And we've got some good ones coming up in the month of February. So I think it's going to be a good month, the heart month, as they like to call it, among other things, and should be fun. But we're still in January. As a matter of fact, we're not going to be going to Beth McDonald today because we're going to just really savor this time with our special guest today on the program. I wanted to let you know also that I'd like to hear from you. Now, I heard from one of our listeners out in West Virginia not too long ago. Apparently, at the time they were trying to listen to the program, they couldn't. And they were, as she put it, freezing. And I'm out here on the Central Coast and just having a great time. In any event, we are encouraging you to send us an email. Love to hear what you think about the programs, about our guests. And obviously, we definitely want you to let us know if you're able to hear the program online, whether it's the stream, whether it's the archives. So please, Richard at RichardDugan.com. That's Richard at RichardDugan.com. And we'd love to hear from you. So please drop us an email. Well, today is going to be a fun day, I think. And we encourage you to join us as we talk with the author of The Mix-Up. No, this is not a book about the 2000 or 2004 elections. It's not about our current Congress. It has nothing to do with politics. It has to do with your life. And it has to do with the fact that you are a miracle. Now, do you ever find yourself confused or upset by your circumstances? And have you ever suffered or witnessed the suffering of others, especially a child? And have you ever wondered if God is real? My guest, Laura Bedford, who is the author of The Mix-Up, is my guest today, and I want to welcome you to our program. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, and thanks to everyone listening in.
It is quite an extraordinary thing. I was actually kind of marveling, if you will, at the title of your program, of your book, The Mix-Up, and I just thought it was really kind of neat because it kind of speaks to the heart of sometimes how we actually feel, very mixed up, very confused. There are things that happen that I want to fix for people, but I don't step in and fix it because it's really not my place to do that because I haven't been asked. And that even applies to current relationships. Tell us a little bit about, I mean, the title seems pretty self-explanatory from that standpoint in terms of what we face every day, the mix-ups, the as I read just a moment ago about, you know, the confusion, which, by the way, there's a great little line that says, confusion is a great state to be in, but I wouldn't want to live there. So tell us about the mix-up and how you, what were the mix-ups in your life that led you, that were the catalyst that led you to the place where you are today?
Beautiful, beautiful questions. And yeah, absolutely. These mix-ups can be felt inside of us. And that's a big question. So Well, to share how I came to be on this path, I feel like many of us, it started when I was a child, and big questions in my mind that when I was young, I didn't think of them as big, but I wondered, why is there suffering? You know, why do people suffer? The Vietnam War was going on when I was quite young, and I wasn't in any sort of situation like that, but I felt, you know, that there was this great suffering in the world, and then, of course, the daily lives that we lead, whether we're adults or children. And I also wondered why I couldn't remember where I came from before I was born. I just sort of instinctively knew I had an amnesia. And as I recognized that when I was upset about something, it was coming from inside of me, that now I see as a grown-up, as an adult, how powerful those moments, that awareness was, because that's where the choice point is for each of us to unmix ourselves up and realize that we have all that power within us to shift into peace or to remain mixed up about who we really are or who other people are and why we're not always feeling peaceful and joyful with each other.
Now, that's an interesting word that you use, choice point, because that is a very familiar term to a lot of folks, myself included, because Greg Braden has been using that term for quite a number of years to describe those moments in time, both as a people, a civilization, a species, the human race. But now you're bringing it even more closer to home in terms of our individual lives and those moments which we would you say that over the course of time, and you and I are probably about the same generation, that those choice points have been increasing, maybe exponentially, as time has progressed here into the 21st century?
Well, for my own awareness is that they're always present every moment, as we know from science and mystics as well, that time is not actually linear. It's segmented, and it's all happening at once. So we're every single moment, it's like a pendulum that's swinging, and the veiled part of our mind is the one that's confused and mixed up, and the chi, or the awareness of our inner light, is always present. So as we take a moment, take a deep breath, breathe within, it's these choice points that are infinite. So I would offer, but please, you know, trust everyone, trust their own inner knowing on this, that there is no increase or decrease. It's always in the present moment that that choice point exists.
Okay. So we're not, again, it's not, okay, well, I've got some choice points coming up and I can make some decisions then. We don't look at it from that standpoint. Is where am I right now? What are the things that I am choosing to do or not choosing to do right now? And I think, if I'm understanding correctly, choice points in this context are also those things that we look at, even in the present moment, and we sort of evaluate, okay, I need to make a choice about this situation. And we sometimes have to do it fairly quickly and evaluate, okay, well, what is going to be the result of this choice? Correct me if I'm wrong, but if I just go with my gut, if I go with, say, listening to that still small voice, and again, whatever term we want to put to that construct, I really don't need to spend time evaluating. If I know that I know that I know that this is the choice I must make, I need to go to the left as opposed to the right, there is no evaluation necessary. I just do it.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. The what we may, as a caveat, say there's an awareness within us that we know, that mm-hmm. we're absolutely certain. And so that, in a sense, is sort of a doing, but there's no attachment to needing to go in either direction. We simply know.
I'm wondering, too, in terms of a lot is being made of, and I'm trying to put this in a sort of a sort of a positive context, if I can, in terms of people who are not really not connected with the present reality. They can be considered to be mentally unstable. they start to veer off into these different directions. What can we say about them in terms of their mix-up and confusion? Have they just chosen, in one sense, to sort of check out and go a different way? Is this something that we can only discuss from a medical standpoint? Or is there a spiritual or metaphysical way to assist and support folks who are struggling in this fashion?
Absolutely. Well, at its very basic level is that there are really no people. There is only light, and then we have these physical bodies that we identify with very strongly with our, we could call it our ego, that sense of ourself that appears to be separate from another's mind. But our mind truly is one. It's connected, and that's why we're even affected. So we begin at the very basics of, is my perception even correct, that their perception is off? So it's always a looking within us and seeing wholeness in the world. There's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with those beings who may appear to be less in touch with the reality I think is reality, and let's put think in quote marks.
Okay.
And as we recognize, to keep self-referring to the I am, to who we really are, then we don't need to worry about any of the external appearances or the quote-unquote the people in the world. And from that perception of wholeness and holding our own light and trusting our own light, we're naturally bringing or holding a presence of light in the world, mm-hmm. so that a being that may be having difficulty from our perception of tuning into the what seems like more what we're judging as being important to us, which is only a perception.
Yeah.
But we can assist us all to align to what's real, and then there's less confusion. There are fewer mix-ups, and we're more helpful and more kind toward each other, regardless of what the form looks like.
You know, that's an interesting phrase you use, being more kind. I was talking last week about that and just kind of musing about it, because I'd actually heard this said by someone else. Why can't we just be kind? And I'm not even talking about going out and doing random acts of kindness, which is a beautiful thing. And I, you know, certainly don't discourage anybody from doing that. But why can't you just be nice? There was a movie, I wish I could remember the title of it, but there was a movie that was out, and one of the scenes in it was these two individuals had this really nasty talk show host at gunpoint, and he's meaner than all get out on the air, just absolutely belittles everybody. They had a scene earlier in that film. So there they are, and he's jogging, and He and one of the individuals shoots him, and he falls, and they run up to him and they start talking to him. And the one guy with the gun on him says, "Why can't you just be nice? Why can't you just be nice?" Now, I know that in especially news, you know, the prevailing philosophy is if it bleeds, it leads, because they're not going to talk about the 765 airplanes that landed safely. But why do we have to be so discourteous is trying to put it mildly?
Yeah, that's actually one of the simplest questions to respond to.
Okay.
And it's due to this veiled mind state that there's this deep sense of fear within our essence, within the one mind. So individually, it feels like my fear. Someone else may appear to have fears that are different from my fears, or some may have the same sort of fears that we might classify them as. But this sense of fear within us that we're alone, we're not safe, or that we're not valued, we're not cherished, and our chi, our life force, our vital flow, there's many, many words, of course, ki, prana, mm-hmm. that we use to describe this, that when we feel upset and then we have a thought, maybe a word thought or just a feeling like if you ever even just shook with joy or shook with anger, you know, there's different responses, even very much physically and biologically, that this is coming from within the mind, which is very, very real. But the upset is a mix-up. So as we recognize that, oh my gosh, I'm feeling this chi within me, and my mind is veiled, I can't remember that everyone that I'm seeing as people are me. It looks like there's not me. And we become very confused, and there's this, beyond this fear is a tremendous sense of self-hate and shame for forgetting who we really are. And many beings are very much in touch with this because we've walked the path. We recognize it's internal. And for those who are still integrating what the teachings of enlightened beings are saying, it's a little bit more of a journey. And then those who haven't even considered it, of course, we're seeing the results of that as well.
And, of course, it's also reinforced. I mean, I'm not going to say I'm a product of, because I didn't go down that path, but I was, I'm going to put it this way. I was a participant, not a victim, but a participant in the process, if you will, that goes on in schools of bullying. I was not the bully. And yet I turned out okay. At least I think I turned out okay. but that's where that whole negative aspect is reinforced, especially. And then, of course, if you grow up as an adult and you have kids, then you tend to mirror that attitude. Even if you don't mirror the behavior, the children still pick up on that stuff, even if it's unspoken. Yeah. They're aware that you don't think very highly of yourself, and you don't think you're valuable to society. And I remember from the teachings as I was growing up in church and in catechism, and then the 15 years that I spent in Christian broadcasting, about the messages about how we were such lowly worms. We were lower than dirt after the fall, as they call it. And, of course, then there's the New Testament and that story and so forth. But I got to wondering about that, and I thought, wait a minute, this doesn't make any sense. Because you have this creator that made each one of us and has a, I'll put it this way, a vested interest. It's certainly deeper than that, but for the sake of argument, a vested interest in us. And we had to have had value for that story to unfold in the New Testament. We had to. If we had no value, what was the point? And that's the thing that I kind of come back to from a religious standpoint, especially. How can we say that we had no value? It's kind of like if I made out of wood, I made a doghouse for my dog. And I don't think it turned out real well. And so I take a sledgehammer and I just bash it to bits and then start over. That doghouse had no value to me because I didn't think it was going to serve the purpose for which it was created. Whereas if I thought it had value, I never would have taken the sledgehammer to it. That's kind of what I'm hearing a bit from what you're talking about, is that we have an inherent value, a very... can I put it this way? A very high price, a very high, priceless. But some of us haven't quite connected that message internally yet. Is that a fair assessment?
Very much so. Yeah, we are light. You know, whether or not we believe it is irrelevant. It's what is accurate. And our thoughts, our feelings are immensely, immensely powerful. So whether or not we're speaking words that we think would be unkind, you know, a lot of us, we have the inner censor even when those thoughts might enter in. Others would just believe everything that is thought.
Yeah.
And so the less we believe the thoughts that we're thinking that are anything less than joy, than peace, than awareness of our collective light, mm-hmm. really, whatever that looks like for each of us, and we feel this within. You know, that's when we detach our mind from this ego, this veiling, which is very real. I mean, it feels very real. It's actually not real, but in order to have this experience of being in an undivided duality, an individual. Mm-hmm. And so as we resonate with feeling, with thoughts and feelings that aren't accurate, but we do this with each other, we're literally amassing, you know, thought forms that then bring into form matter that will confirm our belief, our certainty, you know, whether our certainty is that I'm not valuable or our certainty that, wow, there's got to be more going on here, you know, whatever it is yeah. for each of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as we just love and forgive, literally forgive by an enlightened being's definition has nothing to do with something happening and now we need to forgive it. It is that nothing ever happened because our light is not harmed by the experiences we're having here. So it's truly, a seeing a wholeness, like a being like Jesus or Buddha. But I like, you know, I feel very connected with Jesus because I understand very clearly what he was saying, is that we can see the confusion, we can see the mix-up,
yeah.
and we can feel it in ourself, and we can see it around us. And as we recognize that that's the illusion, that's a hologram, it's a projection, it is not real, ever, in any era, in our perception of linear time, physicality.
That's a hard one. That's a hard one because we are so programmed to believe that it is real.
Who is the programmer?
The programmer is, let's say, television, the newspapers, the media in particular, marketing. It's all real.
The question,
but you're gonna say something different, aren't you?
I am. And a vital and for me in sharing this work is I'm much less about wanting to debate it so much mm-hmm. because we have plenty of that. What I would offer is to question the ego. There's only one programmer, and it's ourself. We all share, like we all share the same light, we all share the same ego. So as we recognize, I invented television. I invented the, we might call them the, you know, we have the inner demon. You know, we know when we're not aligned with who we really are.
Mm-hmm.
And when we trust those thoughts, we manifest those experiences. So someone who may come along and reflect to us our perception of this lack of value or that something else has power over me, like television, like a certain political perspective or
mm-hmm.
anything that we consider a problem, is the fact that we're focusing on something being a problem brings the perception of problems. And as we recognize, oh, I want to feel like who I really am, I'll be more drawn toward supporting life. I'm going to join with those who are, we could say, more positive thinking, who are inventors, who are pondering, who are how can I based and not trusting their victim mind.
Hmm. Well, that's a very good point, and something that we need to keep in mind because we lose sight of what is real. I know that there are times when I'm sort of caught up in trying to stay current here in my own reality, as it were, those things that cause me consternation and confusion and so forth. Thinking, okay, well, how do I fix this? And it sounds to me like what you're saying is, well, the fix is perception. Change my perception.
Absolutely.
But it's not easy to do, and so I now bring it to you. How? How do we, in the midst of all of the chaos and confusion, How in the world do we get to a place where we can do just that? And I'm going to ask you to hold that thought. We're going to come back and get an answer to that question and more as we continue talking with Laura Bedford. She's the author of The Mix-Up, and we encourage you to check out her website, which happens to be available to you, and it is trustingourinnerlight.org. All one word. Don't put the spaces that I just put in there. Take those out. It's trustingourinnerlight.org. We will be back with Laura Bedford in just a moment. I'm Richard Dugan, and this is Tell Me Your Story.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. My guest is Laura Bedford. She's the author of The Mix-Up, and I put a rather, maybe a loaded question to you before we went on break, having to do with the fact that, okay, we acknowledge, we will agree that the only way that we're going to raise our consciousness, the only way that we're going to find peace in our lives and so on and so forth, we've got to change our own personal perception. But when you're hip deep or eyeball deep in it, it's kind of hard to, or at least the perception is that it's kind of hard to do. So what's your first suggestion when we're in the midst of that chaos and confusion?
That's a beautiful, beautiful question. The response I would offer is that the inner trigger, whenever we feel that trigger, that muddle, that mix up, that confusion, is to know that that is our greatest gift. It's reminding us that, wow, I don't feel like myself. And it's an effortless inner shift. The ego wants to think its way out of or into everything. And as we realize to not be afraid of letting go of the thought process, we literally free up our mind so that our antenna, part of which the physical body is included in, we're more attuned to this incredible divine intelligence that we all gain insight from. What I would offer in the path that I have been drawn to since a child is really to hug the ego, not to fight it. The energy of resistance, of force, of in any way we feel within us, we feel it. And as we realize, wait, this is that energy, I don't want to trust my thoughts about what I'm feeling and thinking, and sending love and light into, you know, going within. So it's letting the mind go. Mm-hmm. And that can be the scariest thing, especially because our, I would say our Western culture, and definitely the tradition I come from, which is to rely on your intellect. Mm-hmm. But I'm a natural intuitive and energy sensitive, and just always trusted that intelligence is far more than my own thoughts, and we have to get there, but it's effortless, and so there's no work to be done. That's why enlightened beings will say there's nothing to do, that which is different than taking action in the world, but in terms of existentially letting go of this ego, there's nothing to do except relax and not worry. Mm-hmm. Which the worry itself is a resonant, it's vibrational, and it locks us up, it locks up our chi. We can think of this in wonderful ways like the upward spiral. When we're in a joy state of being or a peaceful state of being, we know it, we feel it, everything's right in the world, or the downward spiral. I love talking with kids about stuff like this because they get that. They know their upward spirals, mm-hmm. and their downward spirals, just like we do. Mm. And to love our own story, but to not believe any of it, but to love it and to love other people's stories as it's an expression of life. It's an experience we've asked to have. And the more that we adventure with life, like I can just feel the life force flooding in me as I even say this and love it. And then we don't fight each other's or our own stories. We flow with them. And then we resonate. We can just kind of feel our own life force. I'm drawn toward this without making that bad or negative or wrong. And then we're, by simply aligning with our own light, we're serving the world. And believe me, I know as a vibrational sensitive, as an inner light speaker, how much of an adventure that can be, living in the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not being on a mountaintop. Yeah.
Yeah, we all can't go to the mountaintops or to the faraway places in the monastic orders and sequester ourselves away. You know, we were born into the world where we are, and we, each of us, has a different task to perform. We're not all asked to spend our every waking hour praying or spinning a prayer wheel or beads or whatever modality you choose, or meditating for that matter. And all of that's good. I've even made the comment, Laura, that if all of the people on the planet right now who were doing that, spending their lives doing that, if they all of a sudden stopped, the chaos that would break out, it's almost as though these people are like the glue that is sort of holding everything together right now. And now you and I and others who are listening are now joining in our small little parts to make a difference, to help to make a change in this world. You bring so many thoughts to mind as you speak that it's very extraordinary. We experienced a loss in August, and it was heartbreaking. We lost one of our pets, and as the time rolled on through the fall and into the winter, I kept telling my wife, "Let's wait until after the first of the year. Let's get through this year," which this year for us, on one in one perspective, was horrendous. On another level, it was quite a learning process. So here we are in January of 2013, and we have found not a replacement, but a new addition to the family. And he's not with us just yet. It's going to be another couple of weeks. But we went yesterday to visit, and my wife experienced what she needed to confirm for her this is the one. And we set the wheels in motion. And I knew that would happen. And so I would continually tell her, just relax. Don't worry. And I was telling her, I'm on it. I'm working on it. And in a manner of speaking, I was. But it was more just to let her know it's going to happen when it's going to happen. And so when it did happen, the sense of joy and release as well was just astounding. And I think that if we can sort of come to that place, and I'll ask you to allude to this. The place that I'm thinking of, though, is tied into something you said earlier, and that had to do with children. And that Jesus is quoted as saying, unless you come to me as little children, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven. And I'm thinking, children. They fall down and they scrape their knee and they cry for a couple of minutes and then they're off playing again, like nothing happened. So they're in the moment the whole time. And that seems to really be what you are speaking to.
Absolutely.
Give us, you have stories within the covers of this book that are certainly quite extraordinary. As a matter of fact, you have a couple of in here. One referring to the title actually is Shifting Adventures. Shift now, shift forever. Can you feel it? Our light. I can too. And it goes on. But you have stories in here that relate to the various, and maybe I want to back up and ask you that question in reference to the steps. I mean, is it just the one step of changing one's perception, or are there maybe incremental movements that we can make in the direction that we need to go to find that now peace, that now contentment.
Great way to phrase that. I love that. Yes, our life is our self-styled curriculum, and it's all we really need to work with, so to speak, or to shift our perception within. When I always sort of go, how do I share this? The shifting of perception is actually effortless, but it can feel, each of us has our own sort of soul journey or spirit journey. So my what works or is aligned with my light may look very different from yours. And each of us goes through our life just getting more used to this idea that I have an ego, and as long as I have that, to simply trust that the light is what's real, and to, I want to make sure I'm responding to your question, because there's so much comes in. Your questions are so great. That we simply honor, as we honor the flow of life within us, our perception will naturally shift. Again, it's always effortless. That's why we never know what's going to happen next, and that's a gift. But it terrifies our ego mind. It terrifies a part of us that's very grounded to this experience as being real. And as we realize that the chaos is from the ego, it's not from the light, then we begin to relax. And you began the show in a beautiful way, which was sharing about wanting to fix things but not being invited to do so.
Mm-hmm, right.
And that can be one, I think, especially for those of us who are doing this light working, to really get ourselves, is that there is truly nothing to fix. And as we simply undo our own blocks, we shift dimensions, because it's already happened. The dream, truly, we are inside a dream that is a fact. And as we shift into a new dream. But it may feel, the more we see all of it as whole and an expression of life, the more that these miracles and the fact that we're a miracle becomes more integrated, or we feel more aligned with it. That's one way to respond.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, that's good. And again, so much pops up in my mind as you speak. I mean, I'm sitting here listening to your words, but it's almost like the mind just continues on. And the thought that occurred to me, you said that the mind is terrorized, if you will, fearful of that unknown, that void. I mean, and quite honestly, we as human beings, since we don't really, really know what's after this life, what's after this existence, we guess at it. We have intuitives that tell us. We have individuals who have out-of-body and near-death experiences who tell us. But we as an individual don't really know what's on the other side. That is a huge void. So in this life, when that mind, that ego, doesn't know, then we kind of have to... What was it? A friend of mine shared with me, especially when I was first learning to drive, he says, now you have to be very, very aware when you're out there that if you leave enough of a gap in front of you and the other car, there's going to be another car that's going to slip right in there. It's like water. Traffic does not like a void any more than water. Water will fill that hole, that void. We have to find a way to fill that void in some fashion so that the ego isn't terrorized anymore. Is there, is that what you're speaking to in a manner, in a sense?
I love the way you describe that. And that's why we're always encouraged to love each other and to take care of each other. You know, even if our personalities and our preferences aren't always aligned, to downright seem completely opposed to each other, to look beyond that, to see only the light, only the brotherhood, the sisterhood, the oneness within us, because we all have this fear. And so when we're triggered, all we're doing is feeling our own, we're taking something personally, either from ourselves or what seems like from someone else. So the less we attach to anything that's coming from within us that doesn't feel radiant, beautiful, or coming from what seems to be coming from outside, the more we free our mind while allowing the flow of energy. And that's a key piece, because when we stop our own flow of energy, like we become tense, and of course anxiety, stress, we see violence, we see depression, just in unprecedented ways in our world, and we're blocking this natural flow of chi. So as we work more, or again, it's really an undo. I don't like to even use the word work. It's more of learning how to flow with the light within, and folks like myself and many, many others can assist those who might not be feeling their chi, who are less sensitive. And we're seeing many high sensitives being born into the world. Many on the autistic spectrum are very high sensitive. They're moving a lot of energy, and that looks very wacky to us. But when we understand what's going on, it's actually helping to heal the world, heal our own mind.
Go ahead and continue.
Well, I was going to share a story when you brought up about your dog, and sending huge love for that, losing your one and finding a new one. But this morning, I received a call, and I work part-time at a little health food store here, and I received a call from my sister-in-law, who I live with, who said she was crying, and she said, "I'm so sorry," and she was told me my dog had fallen down a huge flight of stairs and that he didn't look good. And so, you know, whoa, you know, talk about feeling the rush of energy. And, you know, it was nothing else mattered getting to him, you know. And, I mean, it just brings up, you know, of course, the chi I'm feeling right now. And it turns out he is fine. He's 14 years old, so, but he's okay. But that kind of thing where as we allow whatever we're feeling to be okay. And I was so held, you know, I just feel like I'm so held by the angels, but human angels too. I was able to just be 100% there for him while she and everyone helped, you know, get him the help that he needed. And the miracles that just came in were amazing. And as we simply honor those experiences, whatever they might be, we are realizing how safe we actually are.
That, to me, is really what we're all trying to do. I mean, I think back to that day in August and those events that unfolded. And to be quite honest with you, as much as the emotions were churning inside, my first concern was for, and maybe this was part of being in the flow for me, because I didn't see it so much as fixing anything as much as it was, because there was nothing to fix. It was to move this process forward to the conclusion that I knew had to happen, and it had to happen soon. I mean, that evening, it had to happen. And yet I also knew, too, that and I found the dog, and my wife came out, and she was obviously, you know, beside herself. But I had to let her go through that process and at the same time say, look, I'm not going to do anything right away. I still have some other things that I have to take care of in preparation, so you be with him. And so she was. And then our neighbor came over, and she was with my wife and the dog. And it was a situation that I don't know whether it was that I was in that space, even in that upward spiral per se. All I knew was that the grieving was going to take place whether I did this or not, and I needed to do this. I think it was more I needed to do it, not because it needed to be done, but because I needed to do it. to help me through the process. And I've done this, what, 4 or 5 times since we moved to Santa Barbara. We actually have a small little family, I'll call it family cemetery, by our home. But the other aspect of it was that I knew that this was not the end. There's a great line, another movie that comes to mind, the title escapes me, but there's a great line in it that says, everything will be okay. And if it's not, you haven't reached the end yet. And I loved that line. That is just so, I mean, it's to me, it's beyond profound. Because if that's what you're waiting for everything to be okay, and it's not yet, keep waiting. Okay? And in the meantime, try to stay in the now. Because it'll take care of itself. The universe has a way of doing that. Laura, we have a struggle as human beings trusting the universe. Once we become aware of the universe and its infinite wisdom and its infinite love and tenderness, if you will, once we become aware of that, okay, then we then can start stepping into that and saying, okay, I've made it this far. I'm still alive. I'm still breathing. I'm still functioning. I have food on the table and in the cupboards. I have a place to lay my head. I have clothes to put on my back. And I even have a place to go during the day to carry out the various activities that allow me to do those other things. I'm still here. And so why shouldn't I just trust? Trusting, can you share with us a little bit about that?
A beautiful thing. And you were talking earlier about the traffic and the void and
oh, yeah.
And the universe will fill that void we're so certain exists, that is blackness, that is not safe, and that's never been true. We've never not been safe. But of course to us it feels like a huge muddle, a huge mix up, and that we need to do a lot of something in order to be okay, or to trust the universe. I'm going to have to do all of these things, because if I don't do all of these things, then why would the universe trust me?
Yeah. I didn't even think about it from that angle. It's not just us trusting the universe, but the universe trusting us.
Yeah.
But why would we think that others would trust us if we don't think more highly of ourselves? This, we're going full circle here. It comes right back around to, self-esteem, if you will, thinking that we do have value, both to ourselves and to the people around us, to our civilization. We have something to contribute.
And this is why self-inquiry is vital, because we'll have relationships, and we sort of know what right action is, or right use of energy, and being reliable, and this flow of community and of life. And this is a tool to help show us our chi, to help show us our life force, our vital force. And the truth, though, is that no matter what we're doing, if we're honoring our light, we know it and we feel it. Now, if I was doing something that I knew was honoring my life, but other people had judgments about what they thought I should be doing that would honor what they thought, and again, this comes to, when we're talking in terms of ego and our own stories.
Yeah.
And as we really go within and say, wait a minute, this is when the being will say, I am going to go to the mountain or to the river or to the class or to the workshop. Mm-hmm. Something has to be different, and I'm going to take the yoga class. I'm going to meditate 5 minutes a day, or just say no to all of these obligations so I can get a new perspective.
Right.
And whatever it is for any of us in the curriculums that we've set up as souls, and then we can relax and realize there's nothing actually I need to do to prove my value. And so if someone is disappointed in me, I can choose, and this is again that choice point, I can choose to take that personally, or I can choose to see that as a gift into, am I in alignment with my light? And then things have this miraculous way of working out. The universe fills the void, and some, relationships may come and go in the Course in Miracles, which is one of the primary earthly resources that I use, or unearthly. there are no mistakes. We can't make a mistake. And it's always this realizing that this is an illusion, but it's our illusion. So we're not being asked to say it has no value or it's meaningless, but to realize that our stories and our judgments about it are what's meaningless. We're giving it all the meaning it has. And as we relax and say, wait a minute, if we're having a difficult situation in our life, to say, I'm going to take 5 minutes. I've always been that kind of being as a sensitive that I need that time away because it's integration time. It's, I have the heart of an angel. I do not want to lash out. I'm not an angry, I don't like to blame.
Right.
And yet sometimes I know, wait, there's something not right inside of me, feeling right. So that's when my walking away may look horrendous to another being who very much wants to be in the same room until we've, gotten beyond it.
Mm-hmm.
And as we realize, oh my gosh, that's simply how you need to reconnect. And then we're easier on each other. We're kinder with each other and with ourselves. And we learn what works for us, and then we more naturally flow with what interests us and more easily let go of things, even though they might feel hard to let go of for a time.
Yeah. If you've just joined us, my guest is Laura Bedford. She's the author of The Mix-Up, and I think it's a great read for you to pick up. We're all one. Our unity is felt within our wavy particles, interesting terminology, and only our mind mixes things up. That's kind of what we're talking about, the ego or the mind. I have to say that one of my favorite classes in college, and I only went 3 semesters to junior college, but I loved psychology. I didn't do well in it, but on the tests for that per se, but I enjoyed it. It was fascinating. And then the first job, the first big job in radio was working for this Christian station. And the way I phrase it is it was the best education that I was ever paid for, because I didn't just learn about radio, but I learned about comparative religions and sociology and political science and psychology. In some instances, sometimes a little psychiatry, because I found some of the concepts a little wacky. But nonetheless, it was an opportunity to learn about people in a way that, and I guess I was just open to it. I don't know that a lot of my colleagues were at that time at that station. I just was. I was curious. I was curious as to where people were coming from, and not only where they were coming from, but why they were coming from that space, that place. It's like, and I really did try not to be judgmental. It's like, well, why do you believe that? Are you you must be crazy. No, it was, why do you believe that? In other words, what was it that you were told that you put those things together and now you believe that construct, that paradigm? And even I held on to many of them for a long time. And then, of course, over time, and actually, as I left that station, I was labeled as a casualty of Christian broadcasting because I didn't toe the party line. I didn't accept the things. I questioned to the point where someone said to me, well, why don't you just go read the writings of the founding fathers? They asked those same questions. And then that raised two more points. It's like, okay, well, wait a minute. I never heard of these people you're talking about. And so I must be in the same category as them Because I'm asking the same questions. And who set them up as the founding fathers? Who said that they had all the answers? And I do find that interesting. And now here we are, you and I, talking about how, in a manner of speaking, we, you, Laura, me, Richard, we have the answers for ourselves, not some outside or external force or source. And all you're doing, it seems to me, in your book here is just kind of reminding us of that.
Yeah.
When you first started down this path, and maybe let's back it up even further, where were you before you started down this path?
You know, I feel like I've always been on it because I had a mystical experience as a child, which I had no concept, you know, of as a child until it ended and I knew something very strange had just happened. And I've lived a very, I would say, you know, normal American life in some ways, middle class, and went to college and worked in a lot of different positions, a lot of variety, a lot of travel. I've always had a very adventurous spirit. And always, though, it's this existential something within me and this connection, and my dreams are stunning. I don't realize how stunning they are until I start sharing them with people. Like, oh, my God.
Really?
What?
That went on in my head? Wow.
Yeah. You know, and mystical experiences that are very real and tangible. While I know I'm in my body, you know, I'm here, me, but I'm seeing it through my third eye, or I've had time compressions, you know, things like that that you just don't forget. And it's been a very interesting experience.
Oh, yeah.
So it feels like living a double life, you know.
Well, I know that there have been some dreams that I have had over the course of my life that only after the fact have I found out just how profound they are or were at the time. One in particular, and that I had as a child, I was standing out, and it was a beautiful, clear, sunshiny day. And I still remember my parents' house, where I grew up. It was summertime, so the lawn was a lush, dark green Bermuda grass. And all I remember was watching this piece of paper. Now, this part really did happen. This was not in my dream, where the winds came along, it wasn't gusting or anything, but this breeze or what have you came along, picked up this napkin, this white napkin, and started swirling it up. It kept going until we lost sight of it up in the sky. The dream I had was of me pedaling. I wasn't pedaling anything. And I started to go up. I started to rise up into the sky. Basically, you know, fly. And so that was a rather extraordinary dream. I'm thinking, boy, that would be cool. Wouldn't need any devices. Just start pedaling my legs and away I go. And that would be kind of cool. So I think, too, that dreams are the messengers of some of this information that we're looking for in terms of kind of keeping us centered, keeping us at peace. And that's a question to you?
Very much so. For me, in my experience, I think the light, our spirit, our higher self, are working with us in whatever ways we're open to, or maybe we've developed, you know, in our various experiences as beings of light. For me, definitely, the dream state has been a realm of great teaching and also great, I would say, letting go of or making me aware of for what's going on in my physical life, my waking life here.
I think that for some of us, and quite honestly, I don't remember a lot of my dreams of the near past, the recent past. Although I had one just last night. It was very brief, very quick. I thought it was real, actually. My dog, Makushla, who's a white shepherd, when Connor was with us, she used to climb up on the ottoman and then jump up on the bed. And she would run around on the bed a little bit, and then she'd lie down, and we'd rub her belly, and she'd lie there, and she'd moan, and she'd do her noises, you know, that she was loving this, right? Ever since Connor's been gone, she won't come up on the bed. in my dream, she leaped up onto the bed, but didn't even use the ottoman. And we've actually been trying to get her to come up on the bed so that we can give her that tender, loving care and so forth. And so it's really very interesting, the messages, because I have a feeling that she probably will start maybe. Maybe now with the new puppy coming in, she may start to do that again. Maybe she feels comfortable that, oh, I can be the little kid again, because there's another one here. Something along those lines. I don't know the dynamics. All I know is it would be just fine for her to do that. But dreams are extremely potent if we will just listen. Do you keep track of yours? Do you like, if you have one and as soon as you wake up, you're writing it down in a notebook by your bedside?
If I did that with all my dreams, I would spend a lot of time writing.
Less time dreaming, more time writing, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which I could do more of it. I definitely, when I've had ones that I know, it's like, I cannot lose this. I will definitely record them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I have to say that I've had that thought. I definitely don't want to lose this. I better record this. And then I lose it because I forgot to record it. But I'm sure that the messages will come back again somewhere. It's deep in my subconscious somewhere. As far as this book, is this what other works have you put out there for us?
I have my website, and which is trustingourinnerlight.org. And the book itself, I'm working on a novel as well. I've got probably three projects that have not been completed. So, but in terms of what's available in the public, the book, The Mix-Up, I do have some articles out there on the internet. And I do private sessions, that sort of thing.
You are an intuitive. Is that correct?
I would say I'm an energetic, I support people to get in touch with their own intuition. I'm definitely an intuitive, but I have a very strong perception of what I consider an intuitive to be.
Okay.
And so I would say that, yes, I am an intuitive, but I'm not a psychic in the sense that I give readings for people, but I help people tune into their own light and to feel it, and to look at their thought forms as sound, as color, as geometry, and take them into deeper states where they're feeling their energetic field, which is very, very real around all of us, and so we can feel this resistance, this chi within us.
Mm-hmm.
I do a verbal questioning process, too, which is really fun because the work always comes from where people are at, knowing that they're the one that has the answer for them or the response for them.
Mm-hmm.
And as they tune within to their still core, they'll become more highly sensitive to their own chi. And I think that is the kind of intuitive that I'm living in this life.
Hmm. Well, I know that for myself, I've actually, the only title that I've ever actually given to myself when someone asks, so what are you? Metaphysician. That's to me, that's all encompassing. You can put any other subtitles onto that you want that fit, because I consider myself someone who is curious about those things that are beyond the physical, but that certainly have a direct influence on the physical. And I've been doing that probably since I was 17 years old, when I began what I like to call my search. And that search has, of course, brought us to this particular point in the program, where I have a few questions before we wrap up the program that I want to ask you, that I ask all of our guests, or at least I try to remind myself to ask all of my guests. First of all, who is Laura Bedford?
She is nothing, but she must, here she is something. Let's see, who is Laura Bedford? I would say a being who knows there is far more going on, that we are immersed in wonder and in joy that literally would bring me to my knees when I focus on it. I am passionate for sharing about the inner light and helping people become aware that any upset is coming from inside of us, and that this can shift everything in a moment for all of us, this awareness. I love adventure. I love nature and animals as a great, as teachers of chi, and as a place to inspire this felt sense of wonder. I love stories. I love hearing other people's stories and laughing.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm very simple. I'm probably one of the most simple people I know, but that I probably don't look that way to the to a lot of folks. I hear that I'm deep. I'm not deep. I'm simple.
Yes, that's a very interesting distinction. And what is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing?
Oh, for everyone to relish and cherish this light that we are and this every experience that we're manifesting, because that's how we move beyond anything that seems less than the world that each of us, you know, dreams of, whatever that looks like for each of us. So healing, the end to violence, the end to unkindness, the end to anything that keeps us from feeling who we really are.
Mm. And how powerful are we as human beings?
Well, I don't think we're powerful at all as human beings. I think we're capable of blocking a lot when we can think of ourselves as human beings. As mind, we are infinitely powerful, and the human experiences within that mind, there is no limit to what is possible and what is happening. As A Course in Miracles so amazingly points out, you know, we've never stopped creating what's real. There's just a tiny wisp of our mind in this experience. And as we love it and relish each other and let go inside to all of our dramas, we will wake up to this creation we never left.
Hmm. I want to thank you so much for taking time out to share with us and share with us your work and yourself. And it's been a great pleasure to have you on the program, and look forward to hearing nothing but good things down the road as well in terms of what it is that you want to achieve. One of the thoughts that went through my mind as you said that was, okay, people, you heard what she wanted. Now get to it. So she can achieve this, and we can move on to other things. So thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
I want to let you also know that our program continues on beyond the radio program. It continues on beyond the A to Zen broadcast. If you'd like to hear the entire interview in its completeness, then go to richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, and click on the link to the audio file adjacent to Laura Bedford's name, which is a link to her website, which is trustingourinnerlight.org is the website we are linked to. We encourage you to click on that link and go to Laura's website. Again, Laura, thank you so much for joining us on the program. I really do appreciate it. And again, much success and growth to you and what you're doing, and to those who resonate with the work that you are bringing forth. And we look forward to talking with you again soon.
Thank you.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next Sunday at 3 p.m. with Beth McDonald, our astrological and astronomical assignment editor in studio with us, I'm Richard Dugan. Love to Lal.